So today I will be starting the story from the Jataka, tales of the Buddha. And these are a set of tales that are said to have been told by the Lord Buddha to the monks on various occasions. Whenever there was a lesson to be taught or something similar happened, similar to what had happened in the past, the Lord Buddha would take it as an occasion to give a talk about how these things happen regularly, or sometimes as a way of pointing out how someone's behavior was similar to their behavior in the past, that this wasn't the first time that they had done this. And it usually starts with, not only now did such and such happen, but in the past time also it happened before. But the Jataka which I would like to start today is a very special one. It's one of the 10 great Jatakas, great stories, which come at the end of the book and are much longer and more sort of profound and exemplify the various perfections of the Lord Buddha. And so this one is an example of the perfection of wisdom. So once the teacher, while dwelling in Jetavana, walked in on the monks who were sitting in the Dhammasala discussing the Buddha's perfection of wisdom, as follows: O great is the omniscient Buddha, whose wisdom is vast, whose wisdom is broad, whose wisdom is great, who is able to crush heretical doctrines, who is able to convert, who is able to teach both Brahmins and ascetics, thieves, demons, angels, gods, is able to humble, is able to ordain the vast multitude and establish them in sainthood, in nobility. And while they were discussing such, the teacher came and asked them what it was they were talking, what was the subject of their talk. And when they explained, the Lord Buddha, as was his way, said, not only now has the teacher been wise, not only now has he been able to do such things, but even before his wisdom was fully mature, he was still able to convert, still able to teach. And with that, he told a story of the past. And the story goes as follows, that once upon a time, there was a king named Videha, who ruled in a city called Mithila. And the king had 4 ministers who instructed him in religious and secular affairs, named Senaka, Pukusa, Govinda, and Devinda. And on the day that the Bodhisattva, the Buddha-to-be, was conceived in his mother's womb, there came to the king a very special and exciting dream. He saw in his dream 4 pillars of fire blazing up in the royal courtyard, as high as the great wall surrounding the courtyard, and in the middle of them there arose a flame merely the size of a firefly. But as the flame grew brighter and brighter, it suddenly sped up into the air and exceeded the four pillars of fire around it, and rose up as high as the heavens and illumined the whole world, where even the smallest thing on sitting on the ground could be seen distinctly. And then the world of men and the world of angels and all of the beings in all of the 10,000 world system came to worship this pillar of fire with garlands and incense. And the vast multitude passed through its flame without being singed even a hair on their skin. The king was terrified when he saw this vision, and woke up with a start and sat up for the rest of the night wondering, worrying about what this dream could portend. When dawn came, the four wise men, the four ministers, as usual, came to attend on the king and asked him whether he had had a good sleep. His immediate answer was, "How could I possibly sleep well when I've had such a dream?" And he explained his dream to them. Then Sainika, who was the head minister, replied to calm the fears of the king, "Oh, fear not, O king, it is an auspicious dream. Thou wilt be prosperous." And when the king asked him to explain how he could be sure, he said, "O king, the meaning of the dream is this. A fifth sage will be born who will surpass the four of us. We four are like the four pillars of fire, which reach the height of the main wall but don't overcome it. And in the midst of us there will arise, as it were, a fifth pillar of fire who is unparalleled and fills the earth and the heavens and is unequaled in the world of gods and men." Excited, the king asked quickly, "Where is the sage at this moment?" "O king, as this dream portends, on this day he is either taking conception in his mother's womb or coming to be born on this day." And from that time forward, the king remembered Sainika's words. Now it happens that at the four gates of Mithila, there were four market towns called the East Town, the South Town, the West Town, and the North Town. And in the East Town, there dwelt a certain rich man named Siriwataka, and his wife was named Sumana Devi. Now on that day, when the king saw the vision, the great being, the Bodhisattva, while he was in that Dawatingsa heaven, found that he had come to the end of his life in the angel realms and was indeed conceived in the womb of Sumana Devi. And 1,000 other angels also on the same day went forth from that heaven and were conceived in the wombs of the women in the families of various wealthy merchants in the village as well. And 10 months later, the Lady Sumana Devi gave birth to the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva was the color of gold. Now, at the moment that the Bodhisattva was coming forth from the womb, it happened that Saka, or Indra, the king of the gods, was looking down from his great throne up in the Dawatingsa heaven and was wondering where his old friend had been reborn. And when he realized that the Bodhisattva had been conceived 10 months earlier and was about to be born, he thought to himself that he would find some way to let his fame be known, or let it be known that a Buddha seed had been planted and had sprung into being. And so he flew down in an invisible form and placed a piece of a medicinal herb in the hand of the Bodhisattva as he was coming out of the womb. And the Bodhisattva grasped the the medicinal root, and as he was coming out, she felt as though water had been passed from a sacred pot. There was no pain of childbirth whatsoever. And when they took the baby out and saw the piece of medicinal herb, they said, what is it that you've got? And the Bodhisattva replied in all clarity, having newly issued from the womb, it is a medicinal plant, mother. And saying so, he placed it in her hands and told her that she should take it and give it to all who were afflicted with any sickness. And this is how the Bodhisattva got the name Osadha, which means medicine. Maha Osadha, which means the great medicine, or the great medicine child. The mother was overjoyed and gave the plant immediately to Siriwataka, who had suffered for 7 years from headache. The father was amazed that not only was he born with a medicinal herb in his hand, but also that he had talked coming out of the womb. And they say it is not true of the Bodhisattva that in every birth he issues from the womb speaking, but only in very special births, such as the Visantara birth, the perfection of giving, where the Bodhisattva, coming forth from the womb, immediately asked his mother, "Mother, is there anything in the house to give?" This was the beginning of his perfection of giving. But in this birth, it was to be the perfection of wisdom, and so he started with a medicinal herb coming forth from his womb. And when Siriwataka took the medicine, he found that his headache of 7 years had disappeared, passed away like water from a lotus leaf. And so, transported with joy, he exclaimed, "This is a medicine, a wonderful medicine of marvelous efficacy." And the news spread, and all people came to know that there was a wonderful medicine in the hand of, in the house of Siriwataka. And they came from far and wide, and all who were given were healed of all sicknesses. And the merchant then thought to himself that surely this man, this boy, possessing great merit, was not born alone. And so he looked out through the village. He sent out word through the village to see if there had been anyone, any other children born on that day who would be fellows of the Bodhisattva. And he found that there were a great many other children that had been born who had come down from the same angel world on the same day and were born at the same time. And this, they say, is common of people who have great merit. As with the Buddha in his last life, he was born on the same day as Yasodhara, on the same day as Channa, on the same day as Ananda, on the same day as Kantaka, his horse, and so on. I'm not sure about Ananda, but there were several of them. So these boys came together and were friends for 7 years while the boy grew up. And on one day when he was playing with them in the village, some elephants and other animals passed by and disturbed their games, trampling their playground and striking fear into the hearts of the other children. And sometimes there was rain, and sometimes there was heat. And one day there was an unseasonable rainstorm, and when the great being saw it, he ran for shelter, and all the children who were unable to follow as quickly after him, as they were running from the storm, they became bruised and cut and hurt, falling over each other. So the great being thought to himself, indeed, there is something must be done about this, and we need a hall to play. And he immediately began to put together plans to build a great hall, a playground, where they could stand, sit, and lie in times of wind, in hot sunshine or rain. And he had each of his friends bring one piece of money. And so the great being sent for a master carpenter and gave him the money, telling him to build a hall in such and such a place. The carpenter took the money, leveled the ground, and cut posts, and spread out the measuring line and made up the plans. But he couldn't understand what the great being meant, or the great being's intention to build the hall. And so the great being said to him that this wasn't correct, that his plans were not what he meant, not what he had in mind. And the master carpenter said, "This is the best I can do. I'm not able to make a hall of the kind that you ask." And so the bodhisattva took the line himself and drew out the plans himself, and it was done as if the carpenter of the gods had done it himself. Then he said, asked the carpenter, "Will you be able to make it thus?" And the carpenter said, "No, indeed, I haven't a clue. I wouldn't never be able to make such a hall." And he said, "Will you be able to follow my instructions?" And the carpenter said, "Certainly, if you instruct me, I'll be able to do as you say." So the great being arranged the hall in a wonderful, wondrous manner, such that there was a place for ordinary strangers, a place for the destitute, a place for destitute men, a place for destitute women, lodging for strange priests, ascetics, and Brahmins, in another a lodging for other sorts of men, and in another a place where foreign merchants should stow their goods. And all the apartments had doors opening outside. There was a public place for sports and a court of justice and a hall for religious assemblies. And when the work was completed, he summoned painters and, having himself examined them, set them to work at painting beautiful pictures so that the hall became like the hall of the angels. Still, he thought that the palace was not yet complete. "I must have a tank constructed as well," he thought, "a pool, a pond." And so he ordered the ground to be dug for an architect, and having discussed it with him and giving him money, he made him construct a pond with 1,000 bends in the bank and 100 bathing ghats. The water was covered with the 5 kinds of lotus and was as beautiful as the lake in the heavenly garden Nandana. On its bank he planted various trees and had a park made like Nandana. And near the hall he established a public distribution of alms to holy men, whether they be ascetics or Brahmins, and for strangers and for people from the neighboring villages. These actions of his were blazed abroad everywhere, and crowds gathered to the place. And the great being would sit in the hall and discuss right and wrong and good and evil, and judge the cases of all petitioners who resorted there, and gave his judgment on each. And it became like the happy time when a Buddha makes his appearance in the world. Now it came to pass that at that time King Videha remembered his dream. And he asked to himself, where could the sage be at this time? And so he sent out four counselors by the four gates of the city, bidding them to find out where the sage was. When they went out by the other three gates, they saw no sign of the great being. But when they went out by the eastern gate, they saw the hall and its various buildings, and they felt sure at once that only a very wise being could have built this palace or had it built. And so they asked the people, what architect built this hall? And the people replied, this palace was not built by any architect. Not by their own power anyway. It was built under the direction of Mahosadha, the son of the merchant Siriwadha. And how old is this boy? He has just completed his seventh year. The counselor counted it all from the day that the king had had his dream, and he thought to himself, indeed, this being fulfills the king's dream. And so he sent a messenger with this message to the king. Your Majesty, Mahosadha, the son of the merchant Siriwadha in the East Market Town, who is now 7 years old, has had a hall of such wonder and a tank and a park of such splendor to be made. Shall I bring him into thy presence or not? When the king heard this, he was highly delighted and sent for Senaka, his head minister. And relating the account, he asked Senaka whether he should send for the sage. But Senaka, being envious of the inevitable fame of the Bodhisattva, replied, O king, a man is not to be called a sage merely because he has halls built and such things be made. Anyone can do such trivialities. This is but a little matter. When the king heard his words, he thought to himself that Senaka must have his reasons for his decision, and was silent. So he sent back the messenger with a command that the counselor should remain for a time in the place and carefully examine the sage. The counselor remained there and carefully investigated the sage's actions, and this, as follows, is the series of tests or cases of examination that were conducted in regards to Mahosadha. Number one, the piece of meat. One day when the great being was going to the play hall, a hawk carried off a piece of flesh from the slab of a slaughterhouse and flew up into the air. Some lad, seeing it, determined to make him drop it and pursued him. The hawk flew in different directions, and they, looking up, followed behind and wearied themselves, flinging stones and other missiles and stumbling over one another. Then the sage, the Bodhisattva, said to them, I will make him drop it. And they begged him to do so. He told them to watch. And then himself, without looking up, ran with the swiftness of the wind and trod upon the hawk's shadow, and then clapping his hands uttered a loud shout. By his energy that shout seemed to pierce the bird's belly through and through, and in its terror he dropped the flesh. And the great being, knowing by watching the shadow that it was dropped, caught it in the air before it reached the ground. The people, seeing the marvel, made a great noise, shouting and clapping their hands. The minister, hearing of it, sent an account to the king, telling him how the sage had, by such and such a means, made the bird drop the flesh. The king, hearing this, asked Senaka whether he should thus summon the boy to the court. Senaka thought to himself, from the time of his coming onward, I shall lose all of my glory, and the king will forget my very existence. I must not let the boy come to this palace. So in envy he said, he is not a sage for such an action as this. This is only a small matter. And the king, being impartial, sent word that the minister should test him further where he was. Number two, the cattle. A certain man who dwelt in the village of Yawamajika bought some cattle from another village and brought them home. The next day he took them to a field of grass to graze and rode on the back of one of the cattle. Being tired, he got down and sat on the ground and fell asleep. And meanwhile a thief came and carried off the cattle. When he woke, he saw not his cattle, but as he gazed on every side, he beheld the thief running away. Jumping up, he shouted, "Where are you taking my cattle?" "They are my cattle, and I am carrying them to the place which I wish." A great crowd collected as they heard the dispute. When the sage heard the noise as they passed by the door of the hall, he sent for them both. When he saw their behavior, he at once knew which was the thief and which was the real owner. But though he felt sure, he asked them what they were quarreling about. The owner said, "I bought these cattle from a certain person in such a village, and I brought them home and put them in a field of grass. This thief saw that I was not watching and came and carried them off. Looking in all directions, I caught sight of him and pursued and caught him. The people of such a village know that I bought the cattle and took them." The thief replied, "This man speaks falsely. They were born in my house." The sage said, "I will decide your case fairly. Will you abide by my decision?" And they promised so to abide. Then, thinking to himself that he must win the hearts of the people, he first asked the thief, "What have you fed these cattle with, and what have you given them to drink?" The thief said, "They have drunk rice gruel, and they have been fed on sesame flour and kidney beans." Then he asked the real owner, who said, "My lord, how could a poor man like me get rice gruel and the rest? I fed them on grass." The wise man caused the people to assemble and brought together, and ordered panic seed to be brought and ground in a mortar and moistened with water and given to the cattle. And they forthwith vomited only grass. He showed this to the assembly and asked the thief, "Art thou the thief or not?" The man confessed that he was the thief. The bodhisattva said to him, "Then do not commit such a sin henceforth," and was prepared to let the man go with such a warning. But the attendants of the bodhisattva carried the man away and cut off his hands and feet and made him helpless. Such were the times. Then the sage addressed him with words of good counsel, "This suffering has come upon thee only in this present life, but in the future life thou wilt suffer great torment in the different hells. Therefore henceforth abandon such practices." And he taught him the five precepts, not to kill, not to steal, and the rest. The counselor sent news to the king, telling of the incident, who asked Senaka, but Senaka, as usual, advised him to wait. "It is only an affair about cattle, and anybody could decide it." The king, being impartial, sent the same command. Number 3, the necklace of thread. A certain poor woman had tied together several threads of different colors and made them into a necklace, which she took off from her neck and placed on her clothes as she went down to bathe in a tank, which the wise men had caused to be made. A young woman who saw this conceived a longing for it, took it up and said to her mother, "This is a very beautiful necklace. How much did it cost you to make?" "I will make such a one for myself. May I put it on my own neck and ascertain its size?" The other gave her leave, and she put it on her neck and ran off. The elder woman, seeing it, came quickly out of the water and, putting on her clothes, ran after her and seized hold of her dress, crying, "You are running away with a necklace which I made." The other replied, "I am not taking anything of yours. It is the necklace which I wear. It is the necklace which I wear on my neck." And a great crowd collected as they heard this. The sage, while he played with the boys, heard them quarreling as they passed by the door of the hall, and asked them what the noise was about. When he heard the cause of the quarrel, he sent for them both, and having known at once by her countenance which was the thief, he asked them whether they would abide by his decision. On their both agreeing to do so, he asked the thief, "What scent do you use for this necklace?" She replied, I always use Sabha Sankara, Sabha Samharaka to scent it with. Then he asked the other, who replied, how shall a poor woman like me get Sabha Samharaka? I always scent it with perfume made of Piyangu flowers. Then the sage had a vessel of water brought and put the necklace in it. And he sent for a perfume seller and told him to smell the vessel and find out of which smell it was. The perfume seller directly recognized the smell of the Piyangu flower and quoted the stanza which has already been given. And this is one of the stanzas of the Jataka, which in their original form are just a series of verses. So the first verse is, no Sabha Samharaka it is, only the Kangu smells. You wicked woman, yon wicked woman told a lie, the truth the gammer tells. And so the great being told the bystanders all the circumstances and asked each of them respectively, art thou the thief? Art thou not the thief? And made the guilty one confess. And from that time his wisdom became known to all the people. Number 4, the cotton thread. A certain woman who used to watch cotton fields was watching one day, and she took some clean cotton and spun some fine thread and made it into a ball and placed it on her lap. As she went home, she thought to herself, I will bathe in the great sage's tank. And so she placed the ball in her dress and went down into the tank to bathe. Another woman saw it, and conceiving a longing for it, took it up, saying, oh, this is a beautiful ball of thread. Pray, did you make it yourself? So she lightly snapped her fingers and put it in her lap as if to examine it more closely and walked off with it. And the rest is as told before. When they were brought to the sage, the sage asked the thief, when you made the ball, what did you put inside it? She replied, a cotton seed. Then he asked the owner, and she replied, a timbaru seed. When the crowd had heard what each had said, he untwisted the ball of cotton and found a timbaru seed inside and forced the thief to confess her guilt. The great multitude were highly pleased and shouted their applause at the way in which the case had been decided. Number 5, the son. A certain woman took her son and went down to the sage's tank to wash her face. After she had bathed her son, she laid him in her dress and, having washed her own face, went to bathe. At that moment, a female goblin saw the child and wished to eat it. So she took hold of the dress and said, my friend, this is a fine child. Is he your son? Then she asked if she might give him suck, and on obtaining the mother's consent, she took him and played with him for a while, and then tried to run off with him. The other ran after her and seized hold of her, shouting, whither art thou carrying my child? The goblin replied, why do you touch the child? He is mine. As they wrangled, they passed by the door of the hall, and the sage, hearing the noise, sent for them and asked what was the matter. When he heard the story, although he knew at once by her red, unwinking eyes that one of them was a goblin, he asked them whether they would abide by his decision. On their promising to do so, he drew a line and laid the child in the middle of the line and bade the goblin seize the child by the hands and the mother by the feet. Then he said to them, lay hold of it and pull. The child is hers who can pull it over to one side of the line. They both immediately began to pull, and the child, being pained while it was pulled, uttered a loud cry. Then the mother, with a heart which seemed ready to burst, let the child go and stood weeping, knowing that her child was lost. The sage then asked the multitude, is it the heart of the mother which is tender towards the child, or the heart of her who is not the mother? They answered, the mother's heart. So then is she the mother who kept hold of the child, or she who let it go? They replied, she who let it go. Do you know who she is who stole the child? We do not know, O sage. She is a goblin. She seized it in order to eat it. When they asked how he knew that, he replied, I knew her by her unwinking and red eyes, and by her casting no shadow, and by her fearlessness and want of mercy. Then he asked her what she was, and she confessed that she was a goblin. "Why did you seize the child? To eat it." "You blind fool," he said. "You committed sin in old time and so were born as a goblin, and now you still go on committing sin. Blind fool that you are." Then he exhorted her and established her in the five precepts and sent her away. And the mother blessed him and saying, "Mayest thou live long, my lord," took her son and went her way. Number 6, the Black Ball. There was a certain man who was called Golagala. Now he got the name Gola Ball from his dwarfish size, and Gala from his black color. Gola Gala means black ball. He worked in a certain house for 7 years and obtained a wife, such was the custom of the time, and she was named Digatala. One day he said to her, "Wife, please, you cook me some sweetmeats and food, and we'll pay a visit to your parents." At first she opposed the plan, saying, "What have I to do with parents now?" But after the third time of asking, he induced her to cook some cakes, and having taken some provisions and a present for her parents, he set out on the journey with her. In the course of the journey, he came to a stream which was not really deep, but they, being both afraid of water and not knowing how to swim, dared not cross it and stood on the bank instead. Now a poor man named Digabiti came to that place as he walked along the bank, and when they saw him, they asked him whether the river was deep or shallow. Seeing that they were afraid of the water, he told them that it was very deep and full of voracious fish. "How then will you get across it?" "I have struck up a friendship with the crocodiles and monsters that live here, and therefore they do not hurt me." "Oh, do you take us with you," they said. When he consented, they gave him some meat and drink, and when he finished his meal, he asked them which he should carry over first. "Take my wife first, and then take me," said Golagala. Then the man placed his wife on his shoulders and took the provisions and the present and went down into the stream. When he had gone a little way, he crouched down and walked along in a bent posture. Golagala, as he stood on the bank, thought to himself, "This stream must indeed be very deep. If it is so difficult for even such a man as Digabiti, it must be impassable for me." When the other had carried the woman to the middle of the stream, he said to her, "Lady, I will cherish you, and you shall live bravely arrayed with fine dresses and ornaments, and men servants and maid servants. What will this poor dwarf do for you? Listen to what I tell you." She listened to his words and ceased to love her husband, and being at once infatuated with the stranger, she consented, saying, "If you will not abandon me, I will do as you say." So when they reached the opposite bank, they amused themselves and left Golagala, bidding him stay where he was. While he stood there looking on, they ate up the meat and drink and departed. When he saw it, he exclaimed, "They have struck up a friendship and are running away, leaving me here." As he ran backwards and forwards, he went a little way into the water and then drew back again in fear. But then in his anger at their conduct, he made a desperate leap, saying, "Let me live or die." And when once fairly in, he discovered how shallow the water was. So he crossed it and pursued him and shouted, "You wicked thief, whither art thou carrying my wife?" The other replied, "How is she your wife? She is mine." And he seized him by the neck and whirled him round and threw him off. The other laid hold of Digadala's hand and shouted, "Stop, where are you going? You are my wife, whom I got after working for 7 years in a house." And as he thus disputed, he came near the hall. A great crowd collected. The great being asked what the noise was about, and having sent for them and heard what each had said, he asked whether they would abide by his decision. On their both agreeing to do so, he sent for Digabiti and asked him his name. Then he asked him his wife's name, but he, not knowing what it was, mentioned some other name. Then he asked them the name of his parents, and he told them. But when he asked in the name of his wife's parents, the man, not knowing, mentioned some other names. The great being put his story together and had him removed. Then he sent for the other and asked him the names of all in the same way. He, knowing the truth, gave them correctly. Then he had him removed and sent for Digatala and asked her what her name was, and she gave it. Then he asked her husband's name, and she, not knowing, gave a wrong name. Then he asked her parents' name, and she gave them correctly, but when he asked her the names of her husband's parents' names, she talked at random and gave wrong names. Then the sage sent for the other two and asked the multitude, "Does the woman's story agree with Digapiti or Golakala?" They replied with Golakala. Then he pronounced the sentence, "This man is her husband, the other is a thief." And when he asked the man, he was made to confess that he had acted as the thief. Number 7, the chariot. A certain man who was sitting in a chariot alighted from it to wash his face. Now, at that moment, Sakka, the king of the gods, who often takes interest in the workings of men, was considering how he could make known the power and wisdom of Mahosattha, the Buddha-to-be. So he came down in the form of a man and followed the chariot, holding on behind. The man who sat in the chariot asked, "Why have you come?" Sakka replied, "To serve you." The man agreed, and dismounting from the chariot, went aside at a call of nature. Immediately Sakka mounted the chariot and went off at all speed. The owner of the chariot, his business done, returned, and when he saw Sakka hurrying away with the chariot, he ran quickly behind, crying, "Stop, stop, where are you taking my chariot?" Sakka replied, "Your chariot must be another, this is mine." Thus wrangling, they came to the gate of the hall. The sage asked, "What is this?" and sent for him. As he came, by his fearlessness and his eyes which winked not, the sage knew that this was Sakka, the king of the gods, and the other was the owner. Nevertheless, he inquired the cause of the quarrel and asked them, "Will you abide by my decision?" They said yes, and he went on, "I will cause the chariot to be driven, and you must both hold on behind. The owner will not let go, the other will." Then he told a man to drive the chariot, and he did so, the others holding on behind. The owner went a little way, then being unable to run further, he let go, but Sakka went on running with the chariot. When he recalled the chariot, the sage said to the people, "This man ran a little way and let go. The other ran out with the chariot and came back with it. Yet there is not a drop of sweat on his body, no panting. He is fearless, his eyes wink not. This is Sakka, king of the gods." Then he asked, "Are you king of the gods?" Sakka answered, "Yes." "Why did you come here?" "To spread the fame of your wisdom, O sage." Then said the sage, "Don't do that kind of thing again." And Sakka revealed his power by standing poised in the air and praising the sage, saying, "A wise judgment indeed," and went back to the heavens. Then the counselor, unsummoned, went to the king and said, "O great king, thus was the chariot question resolved, and even Sakka was subdued by him. Why do you not recognize superiority in men?" Then the king asked Sainika, "What say you, Sainika? Shall we bring the sage here?" Sainika replied, "That is not all that makes a sage. Wait a while. I will test him and find out." I'm going to stop there. This ends the trials of the Bodhisattva, and next we get into the tests, how he was tested by the king and the king's ministers.